Podcasting 2.0 for December 24th, 2021, episode 67, Satoshi Stocking Stuffer. Hey, everybody, there you go. The last meeting of the board of directors. I think it's the last one. We're almost at the end of the year. Just before Christmas, time to figure out what's going on and what has been going on at podcastindex.org with the podcast namespace and, of course, the lovely community at podcastindex.social. I'm Adam Curry here in the heart of Texas Hill Country and in Alabama, the man who actually knows who's been naughty or nice. My friend on the other end, ladies and gentlemen, please say hello to Mr. Dave Jones.
There's no good numerology for episode 67, is there? I mean, like, 67 is like the most boring number.
That's always like the white guy on the basketball team.
He's number 67.
Yeah. I think he's always 67. It's weird. I'm all over the place here. It's like, it's not a typical board meeting because it's not actually Friday, the night before Christmas.
This is, you started the show upside down.
We did. We did. Although, luckily, we have the typical hokey radio guy sound effects for a Christmas episode, and we're doing this today with our guest in Australia, Mr. James Cridland.
Greetings. It's very good to be on. I'm a big fan of the sleigh bells.
Oh, well, good, because I also, James, can you just sit in the corner here in this, why don't you get the Chesterfield there? You got that one? Because that's a little closer nice. To the fire here.
Yeah,
it's nice and warm.
All we need now is a phone in with Santa.
A phone in.
Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's right. You see, James is an old radio dude like myself, so I know he appreciates these kinds of hokey things.
Yeah, I would just clarify, I'm an old radio dude. Not like yourself, I'm an old radio dude.
In the UK, did they have we're tracking Santa on radar as he's flying across?
NORAD.
Did they have that? NORAD.
There was a time when I think the RAF was doing something, and then everybody found Google, and they found NORAD. Daddy, what does NORAD stand for? I don't know.
they've got them on satellite.
Russians, Russian defense.
We didn't do any of that. And of course, here in Australia, it's, obviously already now it's tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we're pre-taping this, because we realize that there's no way we can do it on Friday at our regular time. It would be, practically New Year's where you are. So it's just,
yeah.
How old do those jokes get after a while? I mean, are you so tired of them? You just put up with them from people making the fucking time zone joke?
Oh yeah, and then there's the upside down joke,
which Dave started with. Dave started funny. That. Yeah, that was. Yeah,
that's the only Australia joke I know. Wait. No, I've got another one. It's the everything can kill you joke. I mean, those are the three,
which is,
right?
Which is absolutely true. Which is absolutely true. My goodness.
I have a question though. Before we get into what we're going to do at the board meeting today, I lived in Los Angeles for a bit. I lived in San Francisco. And I had business in London, in the Netherlands, and in the United States. And it was so different from anything I've ever experienced as it comes to timing. So you're working, some people are 3 hours later than you. Some are up to 9 hours later. I've had the reverse where I was in London and was dealing with San Francisco. How does that affect your life? With what you do, getting a newsletter out daily, producing the daily podcast. I mean, does it fit in perfectly with a normal schedule? Do you feel like you're living in two different worlds? One is the kind of the civilized Western, the West, where we are. Uh-huh. Well, where the innovation and business and excitement is, and then you. I can't help myself.
I think I'm saying. I think you'll find the innovation and excitement is here. We invented Wi-Fi, so
this I know. Was it not Parrot Systems? Wasn't that the company?
It was an Australian company that invented Wi-Fi. Yeah. There you go. Quick Wikipedia check.
I remember. We also
invented Google Maps. So so if you're a fan of Google Maps, then that's also Australian. I don't know why I'm saying we. I've only been here for five years.
Keyhole came from Australia.
The Google Maps came from it was a Sydney thing.
Really? So a bunch of spooks there, man. That whole keyhole thing was a CIA operation. You guys did Five Eyes. There you go.
The CIA doesn't have borders. About that. I mean,
Five Eyes.
But yes, no. Where were you going? Oh yes. Time zones and things. It's really good if you're writing a newsletter like the Pod News newsletter, which is free. Podnews.net. You should subscribe. It's really, really good because it means that at 9 o'clock at night my time is 6 in the morning the same day New York time. So that means that I've got all day to write something that you lot will wake up to.
Okay. So that's really nice.
Yeah, so that is really, really helpful. What it's not helpful for is trying to talk to anybody. Because obviously everybody is either asleep or they're, you know, come on, you know, I finished my working day. So that gets very, very hard, which is why, you know, I used to try and always go to, you know, Podcast Movement and, you know, Podfest and all of these other big podcast conferences so that I could actually talk to people and, you know, and meet people and everything else, because otherwise I could never do that in a decent time zone. So as you can imagine, the last 2 years have been fun.
And just from living your life day to day in Brisbane, and then, I mean, do you feel like you're behind what's happening or that you actually are ahead of what's happening? If you know what I mean, just the news cycle, the products.
The news cycle really confused me when I first moved here, because essentially there's stuff that goes on during the day, which is all Australian because you lot are all asleep. And then everything happens overnight. So, you know, Europe wakes up and does its thing. The US wakes up and does its thing. So by the next morning, basically it's a big dump of everything that happened overnight. And certainly for the last... You know, for the last 4 years in your country, there was an awful lot happening every single day. And so just sort of waking up to that blizzard of news about what's gone on in Europe, what's gone on in the US every morning was just really strange to me, having, you know, obviously grown up in the UK.
What's the first thing that you do? I mean, when do you start to ingest the information? At what point in your waking cycle?
I tend not to listen to too much news media. I'll listen to the local public radio station.
But is it like when you put your feet on the ground out of bed, or do you look at your phone first? You know, do you have breakfast first?
Oh, so normally it's the Google speaker is waking me up to some radio.
To wake up. This is your overlord from Google.
Well, actually, I've got her saying she says good morning to us, and including the dog, which is always important. And then she tells us what the temperature is going to be like.
You're living in a sci-fi movie, aren't you? Oh, this is great.
And she tells us what we've got in our diaries, and then she starts playing. It used to be that she would wake us up to the ABC news for here, and then the BBC news from back home. But that was insane. So I stopped ending up doing.
Wow.
Jason, it looks like you had a great night's sleep last night. You talked so much less than you usually do.
Your heart rate was lower than normal. You had good resting sleep. You are ready. Hey, look, human resource. You are fit for the day.
Human resource.
One of the devices that I have does actually monitor you at, while you're in bed asleep. From Google, and you can guess that I've not allowed that to happen. That is nowhere near the bedroom.
Your partner is a very smart person. Yes, very, very smart person.
Not having that,
James.
There's this. We used to have these printers at a job I had like 25 years ago. These humongous laser printers, and it was a company called Anzac. And I'm thinking that they may have helped develop the laser printer, Australian company. And I'm thinking they may have actually helped develop the first laser printer. These things are ancient. And so we had this, I worked, one of my first gigs was with doing sysops for a big insurance company. And then we had AS400s. And then connected to the AS400s were a bunch of Anzac laser printers, And then also a bunch of those humongous green and white striped tractor feed printers. Not the small ones, you know, but the ones that are like, what, 20 inches wide, the paper was. And so you would, and nobody younger than, you know, 40 understands if he's even seen anything like this. You have these huge things. I mean, they're as big as, you know, a person. You take like a 2,000 ream stack of pages off of this thing, and it has the tractor feed on the side. But the tractor feed is not like perforated. It's just solid. It's a solid sheet. Right. You know, you don't tear it off. So you had to take it over to this machine called a burster, and the burster would cut the tractor feed off the side, off of both sides of this thing. And it was basically this huge thing about the size of,
sounds like a guillotine.
It was like half a size of a pool table. And you stick your stack of tractor feed, your huge thing of tractor feed sheet. You load the first thing in, you know, and it's going to suck this page in at, like, it's going to pull the whole stack through and cut it off. And so there's these huge blades on the left and the right that look like pizza cutters. And then, so you line it up and you start the thing rolling, and it goes real slow. And then you make sure everything's situated and everything's going right. And it's running around, you know, I don't know, 1 mile an hour. It's going like 1 mile an hour. And then you slowly raise the speed and you get it going faster and faster and faster. And the fun thing about it was that you would get to this certain point and it was the happy zone. And so then it's chugging along, but new people, they would always cut it. They would start to feel a little too comfortable and they cut it up too high. They'd go like 1 mile an hour too high on this thing, and it would start flying, and then it would just go just like throwing paper everywhere. I mean, just fly, you know, all over the place. And it would ruin all 2000 pages of this thing. And so fast, you couldn't even blink. And so you'd have to whole print the whole thing out again.
And that was what, 20 years ago, maybe 30,
24 years ago, something like that. Yeah. 24, 25 years ago.
IBM AS400 was my client. We built their website.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And guess what they insisted?
What?
That it run on that the website run on an AS400.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. Good luck with that.
That was hilarious. I think we ultimately said, look, you guys bought Lotus Notes. Why don't we just do that? Okay? This is just much easier. It's one of your products. Oh, geez. Yeah.
Wow-wee. Gosh. Yes.
So, James, before we get into all of the year, which is why I think we, at least this is what Dave sold to me. Yeah, we're going to do a look back. No, he said, to be specific, James will do a look back at the year for us. Yeah, and I'm thinking, yeah, right.
And I asked Dave, do I need to do any prep? And Dave said, no,
we'll just wing it. Exactly. I think congratulations are in order. I know you were an advisor to Captivate. I heard you say this morning that you were an advisor.
I was,
Did you have anything to do with the deal? Because it sure feels like it.
I was an advisor until the exact time that the deal went through.
So, congratulations. Excellent. So on James. Nice.
So Captivate has been bought by Global, which is Europe's largest radio group, but it also runs DAX, which is a ad insertion service in the US, and also, by the way, runs the big poster sites in the Tube in London, and, you know, on the side of streets and things like that. They basically run those.
What do you mean they run
incredible
them?
Incredible company. They own them. So, the big poster sites.
What was
and stuff.
What was the?
They decided.
Yeah, go ahead.
They decided 1 year to get into outdoor advertising, and so they bought the number one outdoor company, and then they bought the number two outdoor company as well.
Wow!
Just to, you know, because you know, why not?
You're not allowed to do that in America. Company. In America, we put a stop to that. It's a little anti-competitive. No, hey, what do you think was accretive to them for to purchase Captivate? How does it fit in their overall strategy?
Well, I think it fits into their overall strategy because you know, Global at the moment are, you know, they're very good at getting you know, big names, big talent, and you know, and all that kind of stuff for their podcasts, but they don't own a podcast host for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So if they wanted to emulate what Acast, for example, has been doing, or to a degree what Spotify has been doing in getting, in allowing anyone who wants to podcast, giving them a platform and selling ads in those shows, then that's something that, Global couldn't do because they didn't own a podcast host.
Now,
I think it's in.
Who owns DAX? Who has the ad insertion technology?
So DAX is owned by Global. So okay. that I think is the exciting thing that right. They've basically gone right. We want to be in podcasting properly. Is my understanding, and this is going to be one of the things that they end up doing to actually have their own podcast host. So and it's interesting when you have a look at SiriusXM bought Simplecast. iHeart bought Omni Studio.
Libsyn still Glow, is that right?
Yeah, Libsyn is still independent in terms of a large media company, but you can very clearly see that there are large media companies basically buying up as many podcast hosts as they can.
Well, so here's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing, and the strategies vary from company to company, but it looks like radio has woken up. They're about 15 years on the late side, I would say. They've woken up. They're saying, okay, we're not going to take it laying down. I think it's very similar to what we're seeing in the United States with television news. Fox News started by creating Fox Nation, and CNN is now starting CNN Plus. It's what the studios have done with the streamers. So the tradition. It's really about the cost and the opportunity, I guess, for the reach that you can achieve with. With podcasts and with online, it's a trend now. It's a trend. Radio is striking back now. Would you say?
I think it is absolutely that. But I think it is also just looking at the consumption. Radio is very much an old thing, and so radio is being propped up by people who are 45 plus, 55 plus. When you start having a look at younger audiences, they are listening to far more stuff on demand.
Right.
So whether that's music on demand or whether that's speech talk on demand.
Now, question for you. Do you think, because this is critical, this is a point I tried to make the other day to Todd and Rob. See, looking at the trend of young people, that trend is on demand, no advertising. It can be free. I know I'm giving up my left nut for that, Google, YouTube, whatever. But the concept of advertising, I feel... In traditional sense, and I'll just say the interruptive advertising model, that's not the same as host reads or many other forms that it can, and I hopefully new forms that can come. This is what I hoped with Pod Show 20 years ago. I see this to be a danger in the direction that podcasting is commercialized. Podcasting is heading where people are so focused on the ads, but they need to change the nature of them. It seems like the audience is not digging that, and they just fast forward through them anyway if they can.
Yeah, I think there's some evidence around people fast forwarding. Some people fast forwarding through ads, although I think the majority of people still don't. But at the end of the day, I don't think that radio ads work very well on podcasts. And, all of a sudden, I was listening to a true crime podcast a month or so ago, and it was a beautifully produced podcast and the sound direction was excellent and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden it stopped for an ad break. And there was this crazy guy talking about going and buying, whatever it was, a mattress or something.
Yeah, that's programmatic.
Just completely, messed up.
But that's us,
field.
James. We are in the 40 to 50 year old range. Today's millennial, and forget the Zoomers, they have no interest in listening to ads. They just run away from. I'm just saying, I think that's a problem. We need to address that. Or the industry, I don't, but the industry needs to address it.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think we've certainly seen an awful lot more influencers and those sorts of ways of getting closer to a brand. A 30-second ad of somebody shouting at you with a funny voice is not necessarily going to work too well, I don't think.
Or
let me ask you this though. So and this is something I've been confused about forever, and I've heard people try to explain it, but it still doesn't make sense to me, is that, so you're talking about, they say, well, radio is old, and it's, you know, oh, I don't know what the range would be, 45 and up, 50 and up. Mm. And those are the people that have money. The older the demographic, the more money.
This, Dave.
Yeah, yes. The more money they have. Young people don't have money, but that's the ones that advertisers always want to target the most. And the way it's always been explained to me is, well, because those are the ones who are the trendsetters. They're the young. You
know. Well, okay, but let's acknowledge that there's a lot of money in traditional media, in radio, and in television. A lot of it is from pharmaceutical, especially on cable television. So they really dominate. Telcos, I think, is what's really it's equally as big. And they target towards the younger market. And so that, you know, they're just that and insurance, that's for everybody. Things that everybody needs, the kids get money for that somehow, whether the parents are paying for it or they have to steal it. There's always money for your cell phone and some other things.
Well, there's your second leg to that then, is we hear that podcast skews to an older demographic as well. Or at least
I don't think it does.
I don't think it does anymore. And I think actually, when you start looking at younger audiences, for example, they are listening to a lot more spoken word now than they used to.
We have
most of the spoken word there is podcasts.
Yeah, we have a crapload of millennial producers for no agenda. They're just showing up too. They're new. They're new to it. Like, oh yeah, now I was looking for something else.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think we're seeing an awful lot of that. I mean, you know, Dave, if your question is if it's predominantly 55 plus listening to the radio, why aren't advertisers interested in them? I think that's a great question, and it's a question which, frankly, nobody can really understand.
Well, I think they are.
It's the ad buyers, it's the hot young things at the ad agencies that have no life experience. And so, therefore, literally buying stuff on the stuff that they consume. And so they're there. I mean, you know, there's a great oldies station here.
That, by the way, is a very, very important, very important point you make there. I have long said that the media buyers are just corrupted kids who just want Lakers tickets. And they'll make the buy on the stuff that they listen to. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. I remember I was working for a radio station in London, and we told the market that we had put up a load of billboard advertising across London. What we'd actually done is we'd put up about four billboard ads in the street where the advertising agencies were. Because then the advertising agencies would see the ads and go, "Oh, wow, this is really, you know, they've spent an awful lot."
So they've blanketed the market.
Yeah, they've blanketed the market. So, you know, I mean, you know, the oldest station that I listen to here, 4KQ. You know, I've just turned 50, and I love the music on it. It's you know, it's sort of, you know, hot music from the 60s and 70s. It's before my time, but I love the whole feel of it. But all of the ads are for pain relief.
Yeah.
They're for pest removal for your house.
Yeah.
And funeral directors, which of course, you know, prepay funeral directors.
I was going to say, if you're hearing this, so you're not ready to be our customer yet.
brought to you by Pfizer.
And so you're there thinking, you know, what on earth? And the worry, I think, for many people in radio is that their audiences are literally dying.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So that's the concern. And I think that's why podcasting is interesting, because it is reaching people with, you know, spoken word content. You know, music is probably all going to move in the long term. It's all going to move over to algorithmic services like Spotify, like YouTube Music, like, you know, many of the other things. And spoken word is something that can't be done in that way. And that's why you're seeing Spotify jumping in with their purchase of Wooshka last week, which is a... you know, which is another Australian podcast host. They bought Wooshka because Wooshka has some clever tricks to take radio shows and make them into podcasts. And
right, you know, and I was thinking
there's all kinds of other stuff going on.
I was thinking about that. So are they going to be ingesting like iHeart radio programming? You know, how's that going to work? It's going to be interesting because eventually someone like the comedians, people are going to start saying, you know, I'm a little tired. It's like I specifically opted out of Spotify for no agenda. They put it up. I went through the whole process. I said, take it down. We didn't give you permission. It's back up. You know, it's on Facebook. I mean, it's like at a certain point, there's going to be enough people who are fed up with this crap. And be like, it's okay if you make it available for people, but you're advertising around it. Fuck you. Yeah. It gets a little annoying after a while.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I mean, I think you know, Spotify's plan with that whole Wooshka thing is to basically, it's a completely automated system, as I understand it. Sam's
using it. Smart.
He does the Podland podcast with me, and it sounds really clever. That it basically sits there. It seems to record the internet stream, chop it up, and make it available as a podcast. It
does the metadata, weirdly, all that shit. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, weirdly, that was the thing. My first, investment into podcasting, I guess, was back in January of 2005 when I was busy taking the breakfast show from the radio station that I was working at, and we worked out some algorithms to, you know, again, pull that out. It was a music breakfast show as well, so you can imagine how complicated that was, getting rid of all of the music.
Right.
But, you know, pulling that out, making that available as a podcast automatically within half an hour of it going out on the air. And that was great. And it sounds as if this is basically that, you know, at scale. Although they're a fully featured podcast host as well, so they're going to be moving a ton of, you know, really good shows over to Megaphone, I would have guessed.
So is that thing worked out generally for? So I'm assuming what's going to happen. Let me preface what I was about to say with this. I'm assuming that what's going to happen with Captivate is that Global is going to buy them and use their DAX stuff to give them a programmatic option. Is that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, they've been sort of relatively close, have the founders.
James is still under NDA. He can't really tell you, Dave.
Is that true?
I mean, of course it is. It's okay. I understand.
So I can't necessarily.
He knows. Of course, he sold the strategy to them. This is why I'm so happy for him. Finally, a win for Gridland. he exited. An actual exit. That's nice.
Hey, that house renovation costs a lot of money, doesn't it?
I'm telling you, man. He exited.
That house renovation, I'll tell you, yes. My goodness. No, I. One of the things that I do want to do at some point is to finally get rid of this gas guzzling car of mine. I know, Dave, that you still drive a car from, you know, I think it was invented on the same year that cars were invented or trucks were invented.
1965.
Henry Ford drove it himself.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly. But I'm there thinking, you know, maybe now's the time to use those solar panels on my roof for something, for some automotive excitement as well.
Do you have it hooked up? Do you have the transfer switch so you can actually charge an EV directly?
Well, I don't have an EV yet, but my plan is to. There's a friend of mine who actually works for Omni Studio, and he has used. You'll like this, Adam. He has worked out. He's using the API from his solar panels to work out exactly how much power is being generated, and he's also worked out the API for his Tesla. So that he can actually tell his Tesla exactly how much power to pull from the solar panels.
Oh, cool.
So he's basically got it so that it's running at 98%. Yeah, 98% but efficiency.
He needs a little headroom, like 5%, to operate the pump for the sprinkler when the battery explodes. So you tell him to
give a little
sprinkler. At that point, water doesn't matter anymore. It's true. It's just prayer. It's prayer at that point.
So, James, I would say that in this past year, what I saw with podcasting 2.0, I am forever grateful how you've covered podcasting 2.0 pretty much as the lone voice in the media in the beginning. You stuck with it, and you have endured my personality and you know, just differences in general. But I know that we respect and like each other, you know, in so many different ways. But at a certain point, you went kind of from, it feels like you took the red pill. It started with, you know, okay, listen, that's great, this funny money. I'm paraphrasing. This funny money, but that's real. Okay,
no,
we got out of the shit to do was the message that I recall, to fucking boost a Graham Corner on your podcast. Was there a moment when it clicked and it all came together for you? They're like, oh, okay, I can see, first of all, how not just how to use it, but you know what shit we can come up with, right? You're inventive, you're a tinkerer, you like doing stuff, so you know what new things we can do with it, and also basically that there's validity to the value transfer system, because unless I'm mischaracterizing how you feel about it now.
Yeah, I mean, it took me a long time to get into the whole idea of cryptocurrency and to just get my head around it. And I'm sure that is the same with many people. I know that there are many sort of, you know, doubters out there who are not completely sold on this whole idea so far. But from a point of view of the whole value for value thing, I was listening to you on the Mere Mortals podcast a couple of weeks ago, and just going through, the whole ethos behind it, and it works so much better with crypto. Because you don't have that ridiculous, you know, whatever it is, 29 cent plus 3.1%, blah, 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 you know, of every single payment. It just works so much better with it. And so I think that was one side. But the other side was just the whole streaming sats thing left me quite cold. But as soon as the Boostergram corner came along, or Boostergrams came along, because, you know, as I've been telling other people this, it's a way of getting feedback from your audience, which, you know, I'm a radio guy at heart. I used to get lots of feedback from my audience. That was great. But it's a way of getting feedback from your audience that is always positive. Because if you are spending money, sending a message, sending a Boostergram, it's always going to be positive. You're not going to be spending money saying, yeah, you suck. You're rubbish.
You should live my life. What are you talking about?
That's the thing.
But that's when it feels extra special.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. When somebody does spend money to tell you that you're a pile of crap, that makes you feel good inside. You're like,
Exactly. Who's the winner now?
Good point. Very good point.
No, but I just really like that. There was, when I was on the radio, it was a long, long time ago, and the way that the audience would communicate would either be a telephone call, if you remember those, or letters through the post.
Yep, sacks full.
And you would wait three or four. Well, not in terms of me. you would wait 3 or 4 days, and then something that you had said 4 days ago, somebody would send you a little note
about.
You know, and spend some money on the Royal Mail, and you know, and all this kind of stuff. And two things happened when we started getting SMS messages, and then of course email, and you know, and everything else. Two things happened. Firstly, the feedback was instant.
Yeah.
Absolutely instant. As soon as you started a new song, you'd get people saying, "What's this? You know, what's this rubbish?" But also, secondly, it was it opened up the floodgates for people to be negative. And I think if I was a radio presenter, over the last 10 years, which I've not been behind the microphone for the last 10 years. If I was a radio presenter over the last 10 years, my God, you know, you'd need to be really strong. You'd need to be really mentally strong, because you'd just have every single time you opened your mouth, you'd have feedback saying, "Oh, this is rubbish. What's this rubbish song you're playing?" You know, and all of that.
Do you not have Twitter, James Cridland? Do you?
Twitter is fine, but you're not performing. You're not doing your three-hour show.
But there
you
know it what is. I mean? But there's the difference for me. And there's the difference between a radio show that is turned into a podcast and a podcast. It's all of that. It's a show, and sure you can think about it, but you're no longer constrained so tightly. You don't have to hit the ad break. You don't have to hit the top of the hour.
Exactly.
You don't, there's, you know, you don't, yeah. you know, if you, These days, it's very rare, even for, except perhaps for the powerful morning jock, to actually break the format and replace a song. Oh my God. I mean, that kind of stuff. Oh, yeah. The music director's hotlining. What did you do, man? I'm looking at the list. I can't believe you changed that. It's wrong.
Oh, I tell you what. My most fun was I used to be the swing jock on a radio station. It used to reach about 1.2 million people.
Now tell me this terminology though. What's swing jock?
Don't say that in America, James. This just people don't understand exactly what that is.
Oh no, swing jock. Swing jock may be something completely different.
Yes, much sir.
Like, much like, please, can I catch your fag?
Yeah,
that's completely different. I used to be the radio DJ who was on Dave when other radio DJs were having a holiday because I wasn't good enough, and so therefore
it's called.
Therefore, they weren't worried about me.
B stringer.
Okay.
Yeah. We've all done it.
It's like the substitute teacher.
Yeah, we've all done it. We've all done it. Yeah, of course.
And so one of the things I loved about that is that I would get some of the weird shows that nobody would necessarily want to end up doing. And Christmas breakfast is a fantastic time to be on the radio. So I was on the radio between 6 and 10 in the morning, which is great because, frankly, you know, you've got the whole Christmas day in front of you, 6 until 10, here I am, you know, playing some songs and whatever. And just the amount of calls that you get is great. But also, I was given the same music log for a typical breakfast show with, you know, all with the breakfast zoo and you know, three different people. And so therefore I had, you know, I was there in my first hour going, it's only 6:30 and I've run out of songs. I've literally run out of songs. So I started playing, it was Christmas breakfast. And so I thought, right, I'm just going to play any old Christmas music. I ended up, this was a top 40 station, and I ended up playing Doris Day.
Yeah. You ended up getting fired, you know, is what happened.
Like, yeah, Tom Petty. No. Not only was I not fired, I realized quite late in the show that the next person on was the program director.
Fantastic.
Who was coming in and taking over. And he came in and he just said, "I really like the music you've been playing."
Uh-oh. We got lucky on that one.
But it was just fantastic. What a great time to be on the radio. And now, of course, it's completely automated. It'll be from, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of miles away, you know, and everything else.
The automation part. I don't know if you saw John Spurlock tweeted something from a prominent YouTuber. This guy's got like 15 million subscribers. Did any of you see?
Yeah.
I sent it to you.
I saw it.
So did you see this, James? He's using.
No, I'm not sure I did.
Automation and AI. So basically this guy's been putting out YouTube content
10 years,
literally every day for 10 years. And he said, okay, I'm going to, I want to retire. And he said, but I'm not going to retire the channel. I'm just going to retire myself. And what I need is for there to be content for the channel. So he's using like speech synthesis to clone a voice and an animated on-screen personality, this 3D animated like Memoji thing.
Yeah, it's the metaverse, basically. He's going to be the first metaverse star. And if you look at the videos, it's like, it's a nightmare.
They're terrible. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So he's it's somebody. What it looks like to me is it's somebody typing. Like somebody will play through a video game, and then somebody else will come back and type some content into a transcript file.
That kind of fits with the scene.
Yeah, and then it will read it out in this faked voice, and the animated thing will have reactions to it, and that's the video. And he's going to put out these like one a day. And he said,
"It's like Max Headroom, but not good."
Oh yes,
exactly. Yeah,
but it's the future, man. You know what it is? This is the training wheels. You know, and I'll give Zuckerberg this: that metaverse idea is dynamite because everyone's primed for it, and they've learned how to build object oriented style in Minecraft. You know, we've long been since conditioned that, okay, VR headset is not all that kooky. We understand kind of what it does. Oh, look at the business applications. It's going to be perfect. This is a great place for people to live. I mean, I've checked it out, a couple of the, like the open source metaverse. I mean, for me, it's a total nightmare. I hate everything about it, but I can see where, you know, because there you can be whatever you want to be. You know, Brian of London had no legs. I'm sure that's what he wanted to be when he was doing his little Hive presentation.
Yeah.
You know, so it's that's
it's disturbing.
It is.
It's disturbing that things that used to be human are increased. Because if this thing type of thing works out, I don't know, just being triggered by what you said about radio automation and that kind of thing, the human connection is being taken away from all.
Yeah, from the performing arts.
Yes.
From the arts.
And to me, that is what defines what radio is all about, is a human connection and a shared experience. And that, by the way, is also what podcasting is about.
Yes, human exactly right.
Shared experience.
Except podcasting has captured it. Radio has forgotten that important point that you just made there. That's why you're a radio consultant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, radio in many parts of the world has forgotten. There are still some great radio stations,
sure.
But I think in many parts of the world, it's, you know, 10 great songs in a row.
Yeah,
you know, it's an automated system, and that's not necessarily, you know, that's not what anybody really wants. And what I think is interesting is seeing the effects of the pandemic on radio listening. Actually, in the States, radio listening dive bombed.
Yeah.
Here in Australia. Yeah. Actually, no, radio listening went up, and it went up particularly around those radio stations that were doing more than just playing top 40 songs.
And I've heard a lot of it because a lot of people have sent me stuff that's going on radio-wise in Australia during, you know, the past 24 months. Yeah. And it, to me, it sounded like you're exactly right, because you had, you know, all the big kind of state-run stations, they're just telling everyone what's happening. But here, it was call-ins. People saying, oh, here's what I'm experiencing. And, you know, you had experts and doctors. So it was really the conversation was taking place there. And podcasting is not even really appropriate for that type of interaction in a different way. But that, you know, when you're in an emergency situation, lockdown, people are scared. And it's when we had Snowmageddon, when we were locked in, we had no electricity for 5 days, couldn't get out of the house in Texas. Our local radio station that was the connection. It was better than anything. It was better than any news source and the government. That's what radio is great at. That's when it excels. It's just too damn expensive to keep it running, you know, the rest of the 10 years that is just bland and not necessary.
Well, I wonder what about, like, when it comes to Wooshka, do you think that they got into that? Because their technology is novel. Do you think that they got into that mindset because of the strength of Australian radio? Did they come out of that, or are they just clever guys that had an idea?
Well, I mean, I think two things on that. I think firstly, Wooshka is a full service podcast host. It just happens to have a feature that Spotify quite liked. And so, you know, that radio repurposing feature.
They're just so small though. Based on the stats that I've seen, I think they've only got maybe 15,000 podcasts, is that right?
Yeah, and they're still relatively small. They also sell advertising in shows, so I think for economics radio here, they rep in terms of advertising and stuff like that, so there's a bit of that stuff that goes on as well. But the guy that runs it was a former, you know, very senior management person from one of the big radio groups. And so, you know, you can probably see that he would have taken some of the stuff that he knows and pulled that into the new business that he had just started. But I mean, weirdly, that's what Omni Studio was set up for. The other big Australian podcast host, which is now owned by iHeart.
Right.
What Omni Studio started up doing was actually taking bits. It was a really clever thing. It was built into the radio station's infrastructure. It would record everything that the radio DJs would say, or the radio announcers would say, and it would then do some clever sort of building of a radio show just for you, a sort of a personalized radio show.
Holy shit!
So yeah, and it was. I mean, you know, was that like a
plug-in to Dalet or something like that, or
so it was. Yeah, I mean, it was something like that. It was. It would plug into whatever it is that they were using here, so RCS, rather than Dalet. Nobody uses Dalet anymore.
I'm sorry.
But I,
What are the kids using these days, James?
I use that. Oh, they're all using RCS, I think.
RCS? Yeah.
RCS. I don't know what y'all are talking about. Explain to me like I'm five.
It's the thing that holds all of the jingles and all of the what Dallette would have. Dallette was this French playout system, a Windows playout system, and you would basically go, okay, I want to play this song followed by this song followed by this jingle followed by this song, and then there was a little button on the top left hand side which was a little picture of an aeroplane. And you would press the little picture of the aeroplane, and its landing lights would start to flash. And you'd know that then you were on autopilot.
Yeah.
So then you could go out and have a cigarette or
have a fag. I heard you wanted to say it. Have a fag. I heard you.
I was just about to. And I thought, no, I've got away with it once. I'm not going to do it again.
So basically, Dave, this is like I use M Airlist. You know, it's like a modular approach, and you know every station or every DJ can build their own screens, and you got to your cart machines and, you know, your songs and how they're listed, and then it integrates with the advertising department and they control the ad slots in the rundown. RCSworks.com is pretty interesting. So that's high end shit.
Owned by iHeart.
Yeah.
As many of these things are.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
no wonder they're broke.
That's a different side story or a different side topic, but in general, this is a pet peeve of mine about Silicon Valley and VC and all these sort of startups. The tagline of many of these startups that are looking for exits is, don't do this thing yourself. You need to let us do it for you so that you can focus on the real core of your business. So don't waste your time doing this other thing, because that's not your core business. So you need to let us do that. But what we see, you put the lie to that when you see all of these other companies in these big companies all consolidating and pulling all that stuff back in house. None of them are the big boys. Let's just say, the first thing I saw this was Dropbox. Dropbox started hosting its own servers. Apple starts bringing all their production and everything back in house. All these companies, these large companies, are becoming more and more vertical and sucking all these other things that you would think are not part of their core business back in and doing it themselves.
That's how VCs exit. That's the only way these days. IPOs are rare. Mm-hmm. Everyone's just building features for Google, Facebook, and Apple, etc.
Yeah, I would love, that's my thing is, companies outsource way too much stuff to third parties under this guise of, well, you know, we'll pay these guys to do it because then we can focus more on
core business.
Yeah. But no huge successful company actually works that way. They may for a period of time, but they usually end up bringing everything back in. Yeah. And you see that in the podcast industry. I mean, Spotify's going around buying up radio people and iHeart's sucking up everything into the world. I mean, nobody else seems to adhere to that moniker, except small businesses who get duped into the ecosystem that allows rich people to get more exit strategies.
Well, yeah, it does seem to be a particularly North American thing as well, though. There's a lot of, I spent some time working on a piece of boring technology for cars. What was interesting is seeing the European view, which was, right, how do we build this technology into, it was for radio stations to get into cars a little bit better. And so it was, right, okay, well, how do we build this technology? Where's the specifications, blah, blah, blah. That was very much the European view, was, you know, okay, we want to build this tech ourselves. And that's cool. Here's all of the specs. And all of the American broadcasters that we were going to, in this particular case, were saying, great, who can do this for us? And I found that really quite sad. In the same way, you know, when I worked at the original Virgin Radio in London, we built our own content management system. We built our own website from the ground up. We didn't go out and use, you know, the content management systems that were available because they didn't do the job very well. And actually, we knew that we could do a better job if we built our own tech in the same way that Podnews does now. And there are so many people who will, you know, for speed, and there are good reasons, you know, for that. And you know, it's probably cheaper, but just buy something off the shelf and try and, you know, squeeze in as much additional random code as they possibly can do, instead of just, you know, building the thing up from the ground up. You know,
well, and there's also the monoculture aspect to it. Because whenever you develop a huge monoculture around anything, look at the Log4j vulnerability that's sweeping like wildfire through the internet right now. You know, when everybody ends up using the same tech, well, then you have a humongous attack vector.
I mean, WordPress,
we're seeing that everywhere. AWS. Yeah. I mean, we're seeing it with everything. Kind of with that in mind, James, if we can just imagine for a moment, collectively, we are the Duchess of Kent. We have two daughters left. Kind of, you know, they're not the prettiest ones. Can we still marry off Blueberry and Libsyn?
There's a question. There's an interesting question. I mean, I think Libsyn
seems too messy. It seemed like I don't know if they cleaned it up with that last guy, but it's like, oh, the accounting, and there's issues, and there's dangling crap.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be fair, I think you get that with any large company, and I think, you know, it's just that the fact that Libsyn is a quoted company, it means that they have to tell the SEC about this, means that they are far more visible in terms of what they're doing. I think Libsyn is a heritage podcast host, which, you know, I mean, it was one of the first, if not the first. And I think one of the difficulties that
now I'm laughing because it makes me think of heritage turkey for some reason. I don't know. It feels like, okay, I'm with you.
Okay. So I think, you know, what Libsyn has is, it doesn't seem from this far out, it doesn't seem to have enough devs working there.
Yeah.
They've been promoting Libsyn 5, their new reboot.
For 5 years.
For like many years. And it just seems to me, if I was the new guy that's running that place now, Brad Terpak, I would be doubling, if not trebling, the amount of devs who are working on that stuff, and just move forward, or just go out and buy, you know, a modern podcast host, and retrofit stuff in there.
How about some
new clients off?
How about some incest? Why don't we have Libsyn buy Blueberry?
Well, and I think Blueberry has the same issue in that actually, you know, again, there's an awful lot of heritage code in there. There's an awful lot of technical debt, and there's an awful lot that needs rewriting and rebuilding in both of those companies, which is interesting when you then have a look at the other ones that are much the same sort of size, like Buzzsprout, for example. They've been very nimble. They've been very quick to, you know, to do new things. And that is probably because their tech is in a much better place. I mean, there are also personality issues at Libsyn, which we better not go into, but I think that that's also been holding things back as well. But
ultimately, the question is there a suitor? Is there someone out there?
Yeah, that's who I was going to ask. Who's the next podcast host to get sucked up?
Well, no, but who's buying? Who's going to buy is the question. I mean, let's just forget the obvious Spotify, blah, blah, blah. I don't think is there another radio?
Yeah, Spotify aren't going to be interested.
But is there a radio related organization that would want to do the same trick as everyone else seems to be doing? That's kind of where I'm going.
Yeah. And it's interesting because actually there are quite a few radio companies who are using Megaphone. Which is, of course, Spotify. Mm-hmm. So you don't necessarily want to be doing that.
Because they're all going to want to do this. Everyone sees the future. They know they have to go there. Might as well get a host. You've got everything all in one go. Yeah, well, maybe heritage, but also, you know, it's like, turkey tastes good.
But also, on the other side, if they continue using the product that they're already using, if they continue using Megaphone, then they're giving all of their stats to Spotify. If they continue using Simplecast, they're giving all of their stats to SiriusXM, which is a competitor. If they continue using OmniStudio, then they're giving all of their stats to iHeart, you know, at the end of the day, which is their competitor. So therefore, if you're a large publisher, regardless of whether or not you're a radio company, you probably need to be keeping that sort of, you know, the crown jewels of your stats and everything else in-house, rather than giving it to your competitors to run. Whereas, that doesn't seem like a bright plan.
Well, if they just will convert to podcasting 2.0 and value for value, will give them stats and sats. Instead of pursuing the dead model of interruptive advertising. Maybe we've beaten this horse to death. Yes? All
right. Well, that kind of takes me back to I said this a couple of weeks ago, and I'm not sure that I made a good point of it, but it seems to me that the hosting companies that are successful in an organic way, and I don't mean like with an exit strategy or a buy up, I mean, they're just naturally successful. The ones that I'm seeing that are they are successful because they're doubling down on what podcasting's core customer is. And I don't mean on the listener side. I mean on the host side, on the podcast creator side. It's they are companies that are saying, okay, we know that 50% of the entire market are independent podcasters who don't necessarily even care about monetizing. And they're saying, okay, we're going to serve that audience. Those are our customers, and we're going to make podcasting super enjoyable for them. We're never even going to mention programmatic. We're not going to do any of that stuff. We're just going to double down on this, this segment.
I think there's probably a middle ground there. And I think what I was interested in Mark and Kieran doing at Captivate is that they changed the unofficial sort of slogan of their company over to, you know, we are here for the serious independent podcaster. And I really liked that. Serious independent podcaster. It's somebody who isn't doing it as a hobby, which is what Anchor is there for. It's somebody who is, you know, clearly not part of the big, you know, the big groups. They're not going out finding corporate clients and everything else. They are specifically there for the serious independent podcaster. And I thought that's a neat plan. And if you build the tools that a serious independent podcaster might want, you might end up building a DAI solution as Captivate did.
Yeah.
But that's a DAI solution that 10%, 15% of their customers will use. But it's a well-executed one that, you know, that will keep those customers that want a DAI, plan with that particular company. And similarly, if you want, all manner of these other, you know, there are some podcasters that want you to have magic mastering as Buzzsprout do, where, it sorts out your levels and everything else. And that's great stuff. I think where you're seeing interesting podcast hosts moving is adding a bunch of additional features for those people that would use those to make it harder for them to switch away.
It's always a great way to. I mean, that's the only true way to compete is on features and service, price, sure, but ultimately it comes down to, you know, people will pay for something they really like.
Yeah, and you know, it's what I liked about the Captivate. You were saying earlier that it took me a while to get on board with the whole idea of cryptocurrency. It also took me a time to get on board with the way that Captivate was charging its customers. Because unlike anybody else, Captivate was charging its customers based on the total downloads that you get. And you look at that and you go, that's a weird way of charging people. Nobody else charges people that way. So if I get 30,000 downloads, then I'm going to pay more than a podcaster that gets 10,000 downloads. And then you look at it the other way around and you go, well, A, that's where the main cost is, that and customer support. But also B, the more successful your podcast is, the more you'll end up paying, which means that the company really wants to make your podcast really successful, you know?
Yeah.
So actually it's this sort of, you know, interesting virtuous circle in terms of, charging.
That also forces you into monetizing though, that forces you to have to monetize at a certain level. I mean, that, It just pushes of course, you down
but I
that
think,
street.
But I think, you know, once you've reached 10,000 downloads per episode, then it's the sort of thing that you're likely to be considering monetizing anyway.
Well,
you could be monetizing in a much nicer way than a 30-second ad.
You know, we've successfully spoken about nothing in podcasting 2.0 for the past year. I'm very proud of us for that. I do want to...
The name of the show is Podcasting 1.0, right?
Well, but this is interesting and I think relevant. And I don't know, James, if you had much time to think about this, but this keeps popping up to me in... Honestly, I find it annoying, but I'm cognizant that this is going to be with us. It's coming, and there's so many different versions of what it means, and that's Web3. And what I feel coming is this bullcrap term that has been created for Silicon Valley companies. Basically, it's replaced blockchain for Silicon Valley companies to raise money on to go ahead and build things and give away more free crap. To prove that the distributed world, that they own the distributed world, which of course is insane on its face, because the whole idea is this distributed everything. And really, and I've read several definitions, and I think it's interesting how podcasting 2.0 fits this to some degree. The idea is distributed load and distributed share in, what I call the value flow, but that would be micropayments or money or some other value transfer. And that is, you know, clearly a lot of that's on blockchain, but somehow it's a bit of a combination of how value for value streaming payments works with the app developer getting a piece and the value splits. At the same time, it's part of what Brian of Lund has done with his Hive contraption and what's happening over there. You know, so that's kind of the open world that's really... kind of really doing this, and the DAOs, the distributed autonomous organizations that are using smart contracts to, you know, invest in a cause or do something positive that community wants, all away from Silicon Valley. So that means at the same time for me, and this is, I'm going to get to a question eventually, is it feels like Web3 will bring a lot of opportunity and a lot of tools that will be really helpful for everybody that ultimately these companies may never be able to monetize or exit from. But there's going to be a lot of money pouring into this kind of concept, and that could obliterate the entire storage and bandwidth issue for every single hosting company we're talking about, which literally then brings it down to features and service.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I think features and services is the way to go. And I mean, it does worry me that you know, and you've put it so eloquently there, Adam, that you know, the whole point in a lot of what is going on here is making sure that there isn't one company in charge of anything. And I think that's it's the frustrating but also brilliant thing about the podcasting 2.0 stuff that you've been doing, is that nobody is actually in charge of you know, is in charge of anything in terms of how the system works, and you know,
correct,
et cetera, et cetera. And that means that it's slower because you haven't got a large company pushing it, because they won't make money from, you know, their VCs because it isn't a proprietary thing. But it also means that it is or it should be more permanent, because everybody owns it, because it's available to everybody. And I think that's the... I was thinking about this morning, that there's a big amount of friction between the corporate world, the VC funded corporate world, and podcasting, because podcasting has always been designed to be open, to be as available on as many different platforms as you possibly can, because of the great work that you are doing, Adam. And the frustration is seeing companies like Spotify go, well, we're going to do video podcasting in a different way, and Amazon going, well, we're going to do you know, transcripts in a you know, in our own way. And, you know, and the creators aren't actually going to be given the chance to edit their own transcripts, which is mental, and all of that kind of stuff. And that to me is the real friction going on at the moment. I mean, I was reading something yesterday. The BBC Sounds app, so the app that the BBC uses to do live radio and podcasts and everything else, they were crowing about the fact that they've had 25% more podcast listens this year than they had last year within their app. But what they're not releasing is the total amount of podcast downloads that they've had in the last year in comparison to the year before. Across all platforms, they're just focusing on their app because it's our app and we own it. You know, it's
well, New York Times is about to do the same thing.
Yeah,
exactly. And you know, and I always talk about, and this is sort of radio jargon, but I always talk about these apps being P1 apps. They're apps for the people who already have a preference number one for this particular company. So the New York Times audio app is going to be downloaded by people who love the New York Times, and that's great. But people who don't love the New York Times are never going to download this thing, because why on earth would they? Right. Whereas a podcast app has all of their stuff in it anyway. And a good podcast app will help people find new shows that they haven't yet found. And so actually, a good podcast app is so much better for these companies than building their own stuff.
Well, that's,
and sticking their own stuff into a, you know.
That said, yeah. What I would love to see, and corporations can do this, but hobby clubs and individuals, I would love to see, even if just a web app, you know, I'm a big fan of the web app. Just, you know, like, how about true crime only, you know, and curate the homepage or whatever. I can see what, you know, the knitting community is huge, and curate the homepage. You got something going there. It's not that hard. You know, I mean, I'm saying that simply, but there's open source code available. We can have so many different types of apps for specific groups. I have no problem with that.
Well, so there's an app which launched yesterday on both iOS and Android, so on real phones and pretend ones.
I'm with you on that, called, James. You know that.
called Apollo. And Apollo is a podcast app, but it's just for fiction podcasts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I heard you talking about that. Yeah.
So it's got a better list of genres. It's got a better, it's got more curated playlists in there.
Right.
Tools specifically for fiction podcast listeners.
But that, of course,
a great plan.
They need to be, you know, on 2.0, they need to be using chapters and
they cool.
They have it? They're 2.0?
Oh, no, but they most certainly do. And every time, I have quite a few podcast app developers call me and have a chat. And, you know, we're still at a point where we need to be talking to these folks and going, well, you know, please. I mean, I had somebody yesterday who was saying, what can I do to get you onto my new social podcast app? And it's another one of these social podcast apps with comments and, you know, and everything else. And I'm just there going, I'm not really that interested in another proprietary social podcast app. If you're using the open, you know, cross app comments, then great. I'll happily
promote you.
Jump into this. But I don't want to be, you know, another podcast app with another siloed set of comments that I'll never get to read anyway.
We're going to fix that next year.
What would be the point of that?
We're going to fix the comments. We're fixing that. That's you know what's going to be great about that, to your point about corporate friction versus open source, open projects like podcasting 2.0?
Yeah.
Ultimately, when cross-app comments are functioning, it will be because thoughtfulness went into it and love. There's real thoughtfulness about the future, about scenarios, about all stakeholders. I've said it before, but the development work and just even being able to kind of tag along and see how this comes together, it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life. I really love this. It is so beautiful to see. And
let me give you one more word.
Yeah, thank you. Obsession. I'm running out of...
It's obsession as well. But people are actually obsessed with making podcasting better.
Yes.
And whether that's adding cross-app comments because we can see the real benefits of that, whether it's the whole value for value thing, whether it's, you know, just the basics of, you know, some apps out there are having difficulties resizing images. So the podcast images, you know, namespace tag, you know, all of that stuff. It's all born out of real obsession. And,
yes,
you know, and I think that's a great thing. If we can harness that right, I think that's a fantastic thing.
I was being interviewed by Chris Fisher the other day on their podcast network. And I made this comment with him is that, when it comes to all these tags and that kind of thing, the beauty of it is that now there's a place to go. And so I was making the point that as soon as you start doing open standards work, immediately from on high you start getting pelted with XKCD comic references, and you just start getting chastised about, you know, it's like, well, okay, yeah, I get it. Okay, fine. Sure. The funding tag, there was already a tag in the Atom namespace with a, you know, rail equals payment, blah, blah, blah. Sure. I get it. There was already a Yahoo media RSS namespace and some stuff in there that could possibly have been shoehorned into an alternate enclosure type scenario. Maybe. The problem with those things, though, is that nobody knows who's in control of it. There's no working group that anybody can put their hands on or email. The RSS coalition died years ago. Who controls Dublin Core? Anybody? I don't know. Who controls? I mean, Yahoo's been bought and sold 15 times. None of these existing namespaces that people reference occasionally on Twitter, I'll get a post saying, why did you create this tag? You could have used, you know, DC content, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, I'm sorry, but Dublin Core, as far as I know, there's no human being alive that actually is in charge of that thing or extending it or changing it in any way. The fact that there's the podcast namespace is an open modern group on GitHub that exists that somebody can go and petition and say, hey, this thing works almost the way I need it to work, but there's one thing that might be missing that can make it work better in this scenario. And you post there and you may have 10 people reply to you and say, oh yeah, this, I could see this, they could work this way and blah, 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 blah. It's a living, breathing spec with people attached to it. And that's something that RSS and especially RSS namespace extensions haven't had in a very long time. Mm. And so that's, if there's one thing, so I guess what I'm trying to say is you're right. It's an obsession and it's care, but also it's just showing up, because there's a lot of things that podcasting could already almost do, but it just lacked that final sort of 10% to bring it up to be what a modern thing, what a modern specification would need to operate. Mm-hmm. Because so many of these namespaces have existed for 15 years and they weren't like the Blueberry namespace, their True Voice or whatever it's called. That spec had a lot of interesting stuff, but it was built at a time, it was created at a time 15 years ago where a lot of modern tech, the way we use the internet now didn't even exist. REST APIs didn't exist. It was built at a different moment in history. And so,
the other side of it was that it was owned. It was owned by Todd's company.
Right.
And so what you've basically then got is you've got Libsyn going, well, why would we want that? Because that's owned by the competitor. And that's the beauty of what you've done is that you have something which, I mean, it is owned, but it's owned. It's not owned by a big podcast publisher, nor is it owned by a big podcast hosting company.
Well, don't say you, James. You've built as much of this namespace as we have. So that's a shared enjoyment of how far this thing has come. what do you think on that note, What do you think is the most important? I think transcript, I think maybe we can all agree that that's the most important thing presently.
I think right now transcript is really exciting. So you've got Descript, which literally over the weekend did some additional work on their systems to output the right standard.
Yeah, the JSON and the SRT file.
Yeah, the JSON and the VTT.
Oh, yeah. They do VTT fine. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they ended up doing that so that you've got the files now completely automatically that work with the podcast transcript namespace.
So
if I
does this cost money?
Descript does.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they are building that in
is
interesting. I mean, wouldn't it be great if there was an open source, you know, version that would just produce the transcripts? That would be fantastic.
Well, what I'd like to do is I'd like to market them if you know, so you basically hand off your MP3 and boom, you get the file back that you need. You know, anyone who has this kind of service, I want to promote because, you know, this is a big thing now. People are saying, hey, we need these for legal reasons, as you pointed out many times. But also
for advertising reasons, because if you can see what's in the audio, then you know what's being talked about and you can then target the adverts much, much better. Now, none of us might want that. But on the other side, actually, if that's going to make the adverts slightly less bad, then that's probably a good thing too.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you know?
So I think there's real opportunity. And it's also a really simple thing for a podcast host to support. You know, it's a couple of fields. And is available. Producing the transcript is different. Producing the transcript is complicated. But to support just, you know, here's a transcript file, stick this somewhere on a server and stick this in the RSS feed is super, super simple.
Well,
and so I think, you know, the more of that we can get, the better. But I certainly see as podcast transcripts being, you know, a real opportunity to get into the majority of podcast hosts, maybe in the next 3 months.
Yeah.
For me, the most important thing that I would love to see more integration of is Podping.
Mm. Yeah.
I think once Podping really takes off, the power of Podping, it's so fun to say, because, you know, you can tap into the chain for all kinds of different shit. You know, it's not just to get into Podcast Index. I mean, holy crap. Even if you're just aggregating feeds, if you just want to have feeds for yourself, you know, if you just want to look at things or learn something or look at trends or, you know, and then it's like a burst of data that spews out every 10 seconds. And, oh, look, it's got a tail. And it's a transcript attached to it. I mean, if we're doing split second, just to play that hat, if we're doing split second advertising, you know, auction decisions programmatically, wouldn't you want that kind of data? Data is always going to be very valuable. So the more we put into Podping, the more valuable it is and the more valuable it is for everybody, because that's something that really no one owns.
No, but you can kind of almost see the differences here being podcast transcript is something that doesn't exist as a standard that needs to exist because there's real legal benefit for it to exist quite apart from the accessibility, which is obviously something which is rather more important than conversations about legality. That's on one side. You've got Podping on the other that makes something that podcasting already does a bit better. And so I can well see that some people are turning around and saying, well, we've just built, you know, I mean, Apple, for example, they've just built their massive, great big RSS scraper that now touches my RSS feed every 5 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
And so why would they want to retool their stuff? Because it works well enough. And you can kind of see those two sort of different issues. One of them is, we haven't got this. We need this now. And the other side is, we've got this. It's not quite good enough, but it's probably good enough for what we want at the moment, and we don't want to spend the time rebuilding it. So I think Podping is harder, but I can absolutely see the benefit of it.
I guess I see Podping as something. It's so universal. It's such a fantastic idea, it's like I pull myself out of Podcast Index, pull away from the apps. Even here is a fire hose that spews out really rich data every 10 seconds, and it can be used for entertainment, for research, for so many different things. Now we happen to sit on one side with Podcast Index, and we're doing one function of that. So just outside, I mean, why wouldn't musicians use this, you know, here? I can come up with a million reasons. It just seems like there's a signaling mechanism there that we've not had before. This is, this was weblogs.com, which, by the way, sold for $1 million, a long time ago, when $1 million was, now a trillion. So,
I think there's a vision gap. I think there's this is what I've seen with a lot of these sort of forward-looking things that we have going on, is that there's sort of the immediate benefit that everybody may see, but only some may find compelling. So something like Podping would be like, well, you can get notified of episodes sooner. Well, that's great, but that's compelling to me and to a lot of people, but it may not be compelling to everyone. But then there's also this long-term vision where we see that down the road, something like live notifications or a podcast, or this podcast feed has switched from this host to this other host, move notifications, things like this that are things that are actually very, very difficult to figure out. And then it does become compelling. So I think there's a gap in vision here that takes, it's like when you're the sort of inventor or the idea behind, you see the idea behind it, like the podcasting 2.0 community does, you see it in full, and it's really hard to get everybody else onto that page. So to me, that what I see that has to happen in situations like that is we just have to build the things. We just have to build it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two sides of that. What I've found writing the tech stuff section every Monday is trying to explain what's been going on in the namespace, to explain it to somebody that isn't that interested in it in the first place. And that's been really interesting. So actually explaining why you might want the new podcast images tag, for example, explaining what you can do with that actually below a certain size, you might want to get rid of the lettering from your, artwork. So it's just a nice icon, whatever it might be. And I think that's probably something that we should focus on a little bit more in 2022, is actually explaining. I think probably the folks in podcastindex.social are too clever, too intelligent, and have already assumed that everybody else understands where they're going and understands what this stuff is capable of. And I'm not sure that that's the case. And I think it would be good for us to focus a little bit more on just writing down what you could do with some of this stuff, why this particular tag is important, why you should be implementing this particular tag. Because I think the more of that we can do to educate, then the faster Podcast 2.0 will actually get there.
Well, I think that things
we're
like
not bringing, we're not convincing the Peter Wells of the world. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, whether or not you want to go that far, but I think just
stay safe, Peter.
Just pointing to this is the sort of thing that you can do with this tag. So this is what you can do with this tag right now, and this is the sort of thing that you could do with this tag in the future. And explaining those sorts of things. So explaining the alternate enclosure, for example. The alternate enclosure tag could be a really interesting tag which enables you to do all kinds of things, from very low bitrate versions for countries where data is expensive to video versions where you can just switch automatically between the audio and the video stream. You know, in your client or whatever it is that you're actually doing, or a bunch of other things as well, you know, a director's cut.
Well, James, yeah, what I like is that you're so incredibly good at that, and I want you to continue to write that. You need to write these things down. What works in my mind is that's at one level, but, you know, even highly technical people, when they see helipad, they go, oh, crap, now I get it.
Yeah.
Helipad is
going to be super good when that gets into the Umbral app store properly. That's going to be so good.
So you're both right. You're both right on this. I like showing product. I like showing product. It's a great product. It's an outstanding product. Gentlemen, shall we thank a few people and then wrap this up so that everybody can get on with their Christmas celebrations.
Let's
thank people.
Let's do that. I hope that you got my booster.
Oh, well. I got it.
Hold on a second. Do I roll out the jingle yet, Dave? Is it time?
Yeah. Well, we can start with James because he bet you specifically $1 million.
Hold on.
Shot collar, 20-inch blades on the Impala.
Yes.
James bet you $1 million.
Yep.
That, and I have audio proof of this. It is a Cridlin bet jingle.
Oh, you brought it. Holy crap. Yes. Oh, I didn't realize you actually. Okay,
This is a recording of James at the very tail end saying how much he's going to bet.
$1 million.
Yeah, you're right. I remember that. I remember exactly that on the episode. Mm-hmm. $1 million. Now, unfortunately, it was in Bitcoin value in 10 years. So he's giving me the discounted rate, I believe.
I thought it was $1 million Australian.
It's about $2.
What was the bet? What was the bet about, James?
So the bet was that Apple Podcasts would launch Apple Podcasts on Android by the end of 2021 because they're not stupid, and it turns out that they are stupid.
Have you given up before the end of the year? I mean, there couldn't be one more thing.
Because I would doubt that Apple are going to launch something that big. The BBC launched the BBC iPlayer on Christmas Day, so you never know. I mean, it could happen, but I think I'm not so sure. So I am absolutely convinced, by the way, that they are going to do it, and I'm convinced that probably next year.
Would you like to double down?
Well, let me read the note. As James Cridlin through the Fountain app sent 100,000 sats.
That is the correct amount. That is what the bet was, yes.
And he says, so you were right. No Apple Podcasts on Android in 2021. Same bet again for 2022?
Ah, well, before we discuss that, you posted a picture on podcastindex.social. Of your transfer, and what was very disappointing, James, is I saw that the per minute value you have podcasting 2.0 at is 3 sats per minute. I mean,
you outed yourself as a cheapskate.
I mean, you are perhaps the cheapest journalist I've ever met in my entire life. I mean, do you really get that little from this show?
To be honest, I've got no idea why it's set at that level. What level should it be set at, Adam Curry?
Mine's set at 100. I think that's
Me too.
Okay. For those of us that didn't spend billions of dollars in the 1990s on helicopter fuel, what would be the sensible number of sats? 100?
Yeah, 100. Yeah. What do you say? What do you have, Dave? 33?
No, mine's set at 50 typically, but then I'll jack it up to 100 for podcasts I like.
But you boost extraordinary amounts.
I do.
This is the beauty of it. Everyone can set it to what they want, and I just presume that Dave really is
nobody knows.
Shit show. You know. Well, I've seen those 3 sats come in, so I know you're listening.
No, but nobody knows what other people have set them to. That's the thing.
Yeah, but, so, but
unless
see,
you post a screenshot.
Right. Yeah, you've doxed yourself in the worst possible way. You've doxed your.
Now I know.
Yeah, you should do. Everyone should have a. You know, like, you know, I'm going to set mine to a custom number. I'm going to set it to 67 now because that is the number of 67. The day. Yeah, that's the number of this. Everyone knows that it's me that's listening.
By the way, James, you referred to. I think it was on Podland. You referred to the Podcasting 2.0 community as the Task Force. Podcasting 2.0 Task Force.
That was cute.
Yes, I'd forgotten that.
I actually prefer the term strike team. I think that's it.
That means something very different in France.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Okay, let's see. Who we, oh, we got.
So wait, so are we doubling down? You want to do another for next year, James?
Oh, we can. Yeah, we can do that again for next year if you like. What does doubling down mean? Does that mean I'm not a betting man? Does that mean it's now 200?
You're going to lose twice as much, is what that means.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you're gonna stop and think about
that.
I think let's in at the end of so next year, Dave, you'll be our witness. Mm-hmm. I think we did 100,000 sats. I think because I reserve this amount. I think we should do 1,000,000 sats.
Whoa! What even is 1,000,000 sats
today?
Yeah. if you do it 400, in sats,
$400.
That's a bad one. I mean, if you do it in sats, what if Bitcoin goes up to 100,000? Then you're going to go.
No, I'll be extremely happy that I made my friend James Cridland. No, if he wins, I'd be very happy. I'd be like, holy crap, man! I'm giving you 1,000,000 sats. That was $400. Now it's 40,000. Congratulations! I just paid for your extension.
We're going to do 200,000 sats.
Okay.
200,000 sats. That keeps everybody safe.
Holy crap.
I've already signed my name. It's done.
You can tell my name as a witness. Can tell you still have kids in the house. Okay, Dad.
I mean, if anybody from Apple is listening and they wouldn't mind giving me a little bit of a heads up.
Jeez.
That would be good. If anybody from Apple is listening.
Thanks, James. You're a stand up guy. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
You're coming through on that bet.
John Chigi sent us 2,000 sats. And he's from Castomatic, and he says, boosting from Castomatic whilst I'm writing an article about boosting from Castomatic. Love your work, guys. Keep it up. Thanks,
boost,
John.
Boost, boost, boost.
That one cracks me up every time. Okay. I did not print out all of these, so I'm actually reading them off the screen, which gives me the creeps. But Rush Boost from Harry Pilgrim through Breeze app. He sent 2,112, and he says, if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. Free will boost from Harry Pilgrim. Those are lyrics from a Rush song,
ooh,
by the way.
Very nice.
Let's see. Sir Spencer gave us 12,345 sats.
Ooh, nice.
Through Fountain, and he says, it's busy times for Podcasting 2.0 stuff. We now have a working Raspy Blitz installation script for Dave's helipad app. Hey, nice. Thanks to the help, testing and fixing from C-Dubs, and Abel Kirby and I are launching our Value for Value album in 1 week on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, this thing is going to be, they've some screenshots of the mixer, the mix down, whatever they're doing, and it's going to be like 1,000,000,000,000,000,000 gigabytes of shit.
Yeah,
can't wait.
Doing booster.
I can't wait. I'll be boosting that one, man.
Just waiting for those medium and live tags to drop, and then we can water. And then the water will really be churning. Go podcasting.
Yes. Hell yeah. Nice. Hold on, where's my jingle?
Go podcasting!
James, do you have any interest whatsoever in the live tag?
Me personally, I'm not sure that I do, because I know full well that every live tag is going to be live at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right. Yes.
Thanks, Australian time zones. But I can see it. I can see it being useful. You know, I mean, there are some times when I'm up and I would like to see to watch, for example, the new media show, so I can tell Todd and Rob what I think. So yeah. Okay. No, I can see that.
Chad Farrow sent us 3,333 sats through Fountain. He says, "Thanks for the kind words." Well, you're welcome, Chad.
Very nice. Thank you, man. Always there.
Yep. Harry Duran from Podcast Junkies. He sent us app through 1,111 sats through Fountain. He says, can't think of a more perfect example of value for value than this explanation of the 4.6 million podcasts in a way that makes sense. Keep up the great work, Dave and Adam. Yeah. Harry from Podcast Junkies.
It was a dynamite explanation.
Boost.
Yeah, he has got so behind value for value as well, Harry. He's a great guy. I've met him a number of times. He's just got so behind it. So really, really good to see him getting there.
Yeah, I was hearing him. He intros his show with it too. Yeah, he's in there. Chad Farrow again gave us 3,333 sats, and he says, "Love the JCD boost, boost, boost jingle.
Boost, boost, boost."
I tricked him into doing that.
Did you?
Oh, kind of.
you egged him on until he broke.
He doesn't know.
Let's see, Harry Duran again, repeat customer, 3,333 sats, and he says, "Just got inspired by the bus jingle. Hopefully this is enough to ask Adam to invent a promo for Podcast Junkies on the spot. Go podcasting."
Ooh.
Go podcasting!
Have you listened to Podcast Junkies?
No, I think I should. I think, wait, haven't I been on Podcast Junkies? I think I have to listen to it before I can do the, before I can do a jingle.
Okay. All right. Well,
I need some creative direction. Could you guys boost us some creative direction?
Yes. Yes, that needs to. We will return to this.
Yes, I want to do that, but I, you know, people are asking for this now, and you know, it's all going to sound the same if I just do it on the fly.
Yeah, I will bring. I actually had a clip of Harry Duran, and I'll bring that next time. And
we can good, do a, but I want some creative direction from them too, some input.
Yep. All right.
This is kind of like a podcast version of Cameo, the Cameo app.
I don't know what Cameo.
Oh, well, you can pay that? Like $1,000, and Snoop Dogg will do a video message for you.
Okay,
they've tried to get me to do that several times. Like, no, I won't do that.
When you first said it, the thing I envisioned in my head was The Masked Singer, that stupid show.
Oh goodness, The Masked Singer. Yeah, The Masked Singer.
Yeah. I was thinking about Word Up. Which
that's great. With the codpiece. Right. Yeah, that's what I thought of. The red pants and the cod piece.
It's right up there alongside Bucks Fizz.
Yeah. That's why we know it so well.
What was it? Shucks, something. What was that other band you referenced? Shaka something?
Shaka Demas and Pliers.
Shaka Demas and Pliers. That's it.
Yes. Shaka Zulu.
49. Let's see. John's BRT gave us 49 sats through the Fountain app.
Ooh, nice.
He says, "Recently went over 1 million sats of support using the Fountain app. Go podcasting."
Beautiful.
Go podcasting!
Boost!
I say go John's BRT.
Yeah, for real.
Thank you, man. Peter gave us 3,333 sats, and his message is pew pew.
Oh, hold on a second. I don't have that one handy, but it is a good one to play. Well, I should, because it's the official sound of the helipad. It needs to go into rotation here.
It cracked me up when
put it in right now.
Luke from the Umbral, we were chatting on Telegram, and the pew pew hit, and he was like, "Whoa,
yeah, what the hell? That thing's really cool, man."
Cass Peelan gave us 33 sats through the Fountain app, and he says, "Boost Chris Fisher." Oh yeah, Chris is the guy that from Coda Radio and Jupiter Broadcasting.
Boost.
Okay, I have it in the system now. Pew.
Nice
setup.
Cass gave us another 33 sats and says, "Boost Chris." Okay,
boost. Yeah, we can do that.
Boost.
Let's see. 2,000 sats from... Ooh, this is anonymous. Anonymous through Breeze. 2,000 sats. "I don't understand this message. It just says, based, period. Or, if you're British, full stop." did I get that right? Is that a full stop?
Yes, that was excellent punctuation there. Yes, very good.
Oh, thank you. All right. I mean, I'm asking the inventors of it, you know, the English language.
By the way, I should also say that Dave Jackson got in touch with me and said, "Where are all of these boost jingles?" And they are available on GitHub, but they're not on the Podcast Index GitHub, are they? Is there a chance of getting them in there as well?
Oh, yeah, we could fork that over. Yeah, sure.
Mm. I think that would be handy because nobody can find them, and I'm there finding them. I covered them.
I always have a link in the show notes. Every single show notes episode has a link to the boost bait, and that's the direct link.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm making a note to fork that over. Let's see. No, I lost my place. Oh, here it is. Oh, Mere Mortals.
This is a productive board meeting.
Oh, yeah.
It is. It's a hell
productive. Yeah. It's what it's all about. It's this is the part we love.
Yes. Mere Mortals, Kyron. He's gave us 11,234 sats.
Oh, nice.
11,235 sats through Fountain. And he says, wow, the video playing on Podcast Guru was amazing. Very, very cool. I created a clips channel searchable under Mere Mortals 3Speak, and it works perfectly there. Merry Christmas to all of Podcasting 2.0.
Aw, Merry Christmas to you.
Such good guys. Oh, do y'all want to make, before we get out of here, do y'all want to make fun of NFTs real quick after we finish this?
No, I want to leave on a high note. I want it to be a good end. Let's be positive, Dave.
Positive? Making fun of NFTs is hilarious.
No, because right. It just pollutes the timeline. Comic strip blogger's going to post and he's going to tell us we're stupid.
We'll make a joke about it, about you getting no flipping thing.
Yes. He'll do a cartoon. Yes. It's not worth the aggro.
Okay, fine. We'll make fun of it next week.
There you go.
Cass Peeland, again, 3,267 sats through the Fountain app. And he says, love to test IPFS stuff.
Yeah.
I am on IPFS since 2016 when BT Sync left No Agenda. Check out openhoofed.nl.
H-O-O-F-D? Yeah, open hoofed. Means open head for some reason.
Openhoofed.nl?
Mm-hmm. Open hoofed. Yeah. Open hoofed. Yeah, interesting. Okay. Yeah, I know who he is. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to some IPFS in the coming year as well.
Yeah, me too. 5,555 sats. I guess, is that a sack of fives? I don't know what's special about the 5555. That's through Breeze and Satoshi Stream. Oh, this may be from Satoshi Stream. It says Satoshi Stream now used by 250 podcasts.
Ooh, dynamite.
Sat streamer.
There you go.
That's a good stat. Brian Mozzie. Is that right, Brian? Yeah, that's Brian. He sent us 11,722 sats through Fountain. He says, same reason I'm always boosting lately. New timestamp, 1 hour, 17 minutes, and 22 seconds. don't know what that is. I'll have to look it up. I came unprepared for this. Okay, Solonomics. Oh, that's the Under the Bus jingle that you did. 1,666 sats through Fountain. He says, hey, Adam and Dave, thanks for the Under the Bus jingle.
You're welcome.
Love it. Yeah, we said we love it. Thank you. Yeah,
well, thank you for the tip. That's truly a tip. He didn't have to thank me for that. He already paid with a boost previously.
That's true. He paid in advance.
Yep.
We wanted a Dutch Cockney accent, but maybe that would have been too much. Dutch Cockney?
I don't think I can do that. I'm not.
What is it? Is that a thing?
No, I don't think. It's if James and I had a love child, then maybe we could achieve that. But
James, do you have what would be considered a Cockney accent?
No, I have a very boring BBC received pronunciation, is what it's called. Yes, I'm afraid.
No, okay. Well, I mean, I don't know what an example of a Cockney accent would be, but.
Apples and pears, go blimey, Gov. Have you watched Mary Poppins?
gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, that's basically it.
How would you possibly merge that with a Dutch accent? I have no idea. That doesn't seem possible. Accounting. I've sent you an anonymous 5K sat boost from Breeze, a further 1666 from Fountain to reach the 10,000 total mark.
Ooh, now, nice.
Just have to figure out how to split the bill. Now I have to figure out the split bit. That's what he said. This proves beyond doubt podcasting 2.0 works. Happy Christmas, Aaron.
Happy Christmas to you.
Yeah. Harry Duran follows it up with another one, a sack of ones, and he says, heard you mention James as next week's guest. Well, it's this week's guest, actually. Imagine if hosts say, quote, want to ask James a question? Boost now, and we'll read out the highest boost first.
Indeed.
How you doing, Booster?
Exactly.
Mind blown. Harry from Podcast Junkies.
Isn't that cool?
yep. Let's see. I think we had a PayPal as well. I thought we did. I think we had a... Let me get it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did. We got a couple monthlies here. It's a short time period, so we didn't have much. But we got an anonymous $25 PayPal. Thank you, Anonymous. Survaya Vash gave us $5. Keith Gibson gave us $25. Thank you, Keith. You rock steady every month. I appreciate it. Dwayne Goldie gave us $8. And Paul Erskine gave us $11.14.
And we thank everybody for supporting Podcasting 2.0, the podcast, but the entire project. It goes straight into the liquidity for the node. It goes into... well, of course, part of it goes to t-shirts. we all do like the t-shirts, but it really keeps the infrastructure running, and we highly appreciate it. Go to podcastindex.org. At the bottom, there's a donate button. We finally have, I think, a service. We can get a QR code to scan for one-off donations. But above all, if you can boost. We want to get you boost. And a portion of today's show will also go to our guest, James Cridland. We will assign a 33% split, since you were definitely a third of the whole system here. Yeah, we really appreciate it. And thanks for a great year, James. I look forward to there's my dinner ready. Look forward to all of the trouble we're going to get into and all the arguments and good things that'll come out of the coming year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I look forward to it too. Thank you so much for everything that you've done for podcasting, both in the dim and distant past and over the last year as well. So thank you very much.
That was that was great. Thanks, James. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to the next year. And I mean, what's one thing that you think, just kind of lead us out a little bit? What is one thing that you think that you are the most excited about as far as anything to do with the namespace or podcasting 2.0? What's your big hope for 2022?
I think I've got a couple. I think one of the big hopes is that the podcast transcript tag is pretty well universally taken up. That would be good for creators, because we would be able to control what our transcripts said, but also good for, good for everybody, good for accessibility, good for podcast apps, everything else. So I think that would be, that's kind of the low-hanging fruit. And I would hope that more people, one of the things that concerns me a little bit about Boostergrams and value for value is that there are some people who are using it, but it doesn't necessarily feel to me as if it's growing that much. And it doesn't necessarily feel to me as if it's breaking through to new people that aren't already into this sort of thing. So I would really like to see much more of that in 2022, of actually, seeing different names in the Boostergram list, of seeing more people being involved. And I think, helping as many podcasts be into, value for value is, I think, a really good thing. And that goes for both the technical side, but I think it also goes for the side of, what is it that you say in your podcast? You do a Boostergram Corner? The only reason I do a Boostergram Corner is that I know social proof that it actually will mean that you get more boosts. And so, if we can get more of that help next year, I think that's super exciting, because anything that offers an alternative, it's not necessarily the end of advertising, but it's an alternative to advertising. I think that to me is a really good thing for the health of the industry and frankly, the health of people as a whole. So, super excited as to where that might go.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being on the show, man. It's been great working with you for the last year and a half, or however long it's been at this point. I'm losing track of time, but I'm good. Adam, Merry Christmas. James, Merry Christmas.
Indeed, and Happy Christmas to you. And I look forward to hopefully seeing you in the US at some point next year.
Oh, that would be great.
Thank you again, James. That'll do it for the board meeting, the pre-Christmas board meeting of Podcasting 2.0. One more before the end of the year. Have a very Merry Christmas, everybody. We'll see you next week.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcast index.org for more information.
Boost! Go podcasting!
Boost, boost, boost.